Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Nerd to the Third Power, your one-stop shop for all things nerdy and awesome. I'm your host and master of ceremonies, Dr. Gonzo. With me, as always, this epic quest of awesomeness is our resident anime goddess, the Cat. Cat, how you doing this week?
I'm okay. I've been trying to fight off what I think is another case of bronchitis, so I'm trying real hard not to have bronchitis right now. That's my normal state of being, though, for real.
Just a continuous long war against you and bronchitis.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's been, like, my last 2 years. Me versus the bronchitis. Ash versus the Evil Dead.
Autobots versus the Decepticons. Coke versus Pepsi.
Joe versus a volcano. That's the level of rivalry.
I'm not familiar with that last one.
Oh, it was, like, a Tom Hanks movie from the early 90s?
All right, well, we got a fun show for you guys this week. Today, we're discussing something that you guys have been asking us to talk about for a while, and now we're finally getting onto it with Season 3's release, and that is Stranger Things, the hit Netflix series that just had its third season come out a couple weeks ago, and I've been really excited about it. I know Kat's really excited about it, so yeah, it's going to be a fun show. So definitely a lot to talk about that. But of course, serious procedure to follow, so we are going to begin, as always, with Ask a Geek. And first question here. Let's see here now. Let's see if we got a if we can get a weird one here. Okay. Here's a question from Melanie, and her question is for me, and it is: what is the weirdest thing that I have ever seen in somebody's game collection? And I actually have an answer for this one that really surprised me even when I saw it. Just a couple weeks ago, went with a friend of mine we did a circuit of our retro stores we hit up in Pennsylvania. And in one of the stores, we found, and if you're watching on YouTube, I'm actually going to include the video clip that I took of this thing. I found this Starlight Children's Foundation Nintendo 64 cart. And it's basically just this giant cart with a TV built into it, with an N64 and some games hooked up to it that, you know, the hospitals would wheel around to children's wards where kids are like waiting for surgery or are confined to the beds because of some vicious hell disease. And this store had one of these carts in their stock, and it was for sale. And can I tell you just how hard it was for me to not just whip out my debit card and just drop the $1,500 for this thing just right there? But I was like, yeah, I'm in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and I don't think I can fit this in the trunk of a Prius. I'm gonna have to come back when I have adequate transport. So, that, I would say, is the strangest thing that I've ever seen. Not necessarily in someone's collection, but just out in the wild. So, yeah, that's definitely the most out there thing that I've seen yet. But if there's one thing that I've learned about game collecting, it's that there is always something even weirder out there. So I eagerly look forward to the day where I find something that actually tops that. Kat, what about you? What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen in an anime collection or on sale at an anime con?
Oh gosh, like the weirdest, I don't know, because honestly, my concept of what's weird is pretty skewed because anime fans. The anime fans in general are pretty fucking weird. I honestly can't think of anything weird, like anything that I would consider weird. Besides the fact that, like, it's a little bit harder for us to get stuff here. Like, legal merchandise options in this country are very small compared to, like, say, like, if you were in Japan. I probably saw some weird shit in Japan. If I could just rack my brain for long enough. I know they have really weird merch there. I'll say this. There are some weird, like, merch opportunities in Japan. Like, stuff that I haven't seen personally, but I know exists, are, like, when they do, like, One Piece is being used as in an advertising campaign for, like, Gillette razors or something like that. And you're just like, what does this have to do with anything? What does this have to do with anything? So you get some random item, just any old normal item, and then it's got an anime character on it, and you're like, why? When I lived in Japan, they had a thing going on with the local sports team. And by that, I mean one of the most important baseball teams in the country was the Hanshin Tigers. And they just had, like, just like a Coke bottle or something, and then if you bought it, you would get like a Hanshin Tigers like phone charm. And I was like, why? I mean, like, really? But these things don't really necessarily go with each other. I mean, I guess I get it, but still, it's just like you get some weird combinations there.
You know, that actually makes me think of something in the gaming side of things. Are you familiar with the Diet Hawks? They're a Japanese sports team. Well, they had a tie-in with Nintendo, and Nintendo actually produced a line of special edition Diahawks branded Nintendo 64 consoles that are actually pretty highly sought after here on our side of the pond.
Interesting.
They were like these bright orange translucent consoles.
If you want to know something really weird that I have seen for sale, is, you know, because Hello Kitty's a thing. We all know Hello Kitty. We all know Kitty Chan. Mm-hmm. Hello Kitty is just a merchandising thing. I mean,
I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, so a couple years ago, Hello Kitty did a crossover with Kiss, the band. So they released a bunch of merch with, like, Hello Kitty characters with the Kiss hair and the Kiss makeup. And, like, it was so strange. It just made me go, what was Kiss thinking? I get what Hello Kitty was thinking. Like, was Kiss like, oh, yeah, we love Hello Kitty. Like, I don't know, but it's so crazy that there was all this merch out, and you could probably still find it like online and stuff.
I think I've actually seen one of those recently, those Hello Kitty Kiss dolls. I gotta say though, that was when you brought up Hello Kitty, that was not the direction I thought you were gonna go with that.
Oh gosh, which way were you thinking?
Well, I immediately had a flashback to the Hello Kitty episode of The Toys That Made Us, where they talked about the quote unquote shoulder massager. Hint, hint, oh, nudge, nudge.
That is a thing, guys. They made Hello Kitty dildos. It's a thing. Shoulder massagers, because that's a thing.
Yeah, that's right up there with ethical mechanics is loot boxes. Yeah, who are you trying to fool?
No, I think the crossover with Kiss is weirder than the vibrators and dildos and stuff. I think that's still weirder.
Yeah, you know what? I gotta give you that, because, like, you know, the vibrator, that's just like it's like you've done everything else. You may as well tick off this one last box. But Hello Kitty and Kiss, someone had to sit there and think of that for a while.
That was a meeting. That was like several meetings going, what can we do next? Huh. And then people were throwing out ideas and writing them up on a board and crossing stuff out because it was too inconceivable. And somebody circled Kiss up on a board and was like, that's the one we're doing.
Well, I mean, you know, could have been worse. It could have gone for the Rolling Stones and had a Keith Richards branded Hello Kitty that came with like a heroin needle.
You know, if Keith Richards was just a little more distinctive looking, That's because I think that's what it was with Kiss, is they're so distinctive looking. You just, you look at the branding and you're like, I know what this is. So that's what they were going for. Because it's like Hello Kitty. You're like, oh, that's how, that's Kitty. That's the same thing with Kiss. It's immediate recognition.
Yeah, anyway. the one thing they're missing was like they as, because I'm looking at a picture one right now, they didn't give her Gene Simmons' tongue, but I guess that makes sense because she has no mouth, and yet she must scream.
There used to be a website called Hello Kitty Has No Mouth.
Oh God, that's a throwback.
Yeah,
this was like what, 2002, 2003.
So long ago, Hello Kitty Has No Mouth, but they make Hello Kitty toothpaste. That was the whole website, was like Hello Kitty Has No Mouth, but. Dot, dot, dot.
Now I'm curious.
Is it still there?
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm googling it and I don't see nope. It just brings me the because like, but I remember that Hello Kitty has no mouth. Oh no, wait. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's still here.
Oh my god, guys, we have made an archaeological discovery.
Well, I don't see anything about the toothpaste, but I see like the original meme page where it's got like Hello Kitty has no mouth, but she must scream. That is why her head is so big. Hello Kitty has no mouth, yet she speaks the truth. Hello Kitty has no mouth, so where has all the pores gone? I'm gonna include the link to this underneath the feed. This is like legit internet history here.
This is so old. This is stuff like we were joking about, like yeah, probably like 15 years ago.
Oh, older than that. Copyright 1998. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, but this is stuff like Gonzo and I joked about when we were in college together many, many moons ago.
This website could vote. This website could go to war and die for its country. All right. Okay, let's see. But yeah, I'm going to include a link to this underneath the feed here for you guys to check out. Let's see here now. Next question here. Here is a question from Danny, and this is a question for Skyblaze. So that one's going to have to wait. Let's see here now. Here's one that is nice and topical. Here's one from Peter, and his question is, what are our thoughts on the live action, which I kind of have to bite back a retort on this, the live action Lion King film that just came out. To which I say, I have no plans on seeing this movie, but like everything I've seen, every shot I've seen from this movie, it looks like they hired the color coordinator from the Call of Duty games, because everything is just brown. So much brown. No color, but brown.
I have thoughts on it. My thoughts aren't wholly negative. I think that it's probably fine. I've heard the soundtrack's really good. I've seen a lot of people saying, oh my gosh, I just started crying as soon as the first song came up. And I'm like, that's your nostalgia talking. What about your analysis? I don't have really strong feelings one way or the other. I don't plan on seeing it in theaters because I don't want to give my money to Disney for this. I don't want Disney to keep making live action versions of things that are fine. Things are fine exactly the way they are. Like, there's a reason why we make animated films to begin with. We make animated films to do the things that live action films can't. And like, as soon as we start making all of those things into live action films, it loses something. And it's hard to say exactly what it loses, but in the Lion King's case, we know that it loses all of those wonderful facial expressions and like the appearances of the characters being very distinctive. There's just that bit that's lost. That is why they made it a cartoon in the first place. So I don't want to support, I've seen like one. I saw Beauty and the Beast because Beauty and the Beast is my favorite Disney film, like period.
And you know what? That one at least did some new things with the source material. Like yeah, it wasn't much, things. But it was there.
And that one, it made sense. There's been so many different adaptations of Beauty and the Beast you know, like not just Disney, but other versions. You know, it's not inconceivable for them to do a live action version. There was, you know, like it did its own thing and it's fine. And, you know, like I didn't see Cinderella because there's already been a million live action versions of Cinderella. I don't give a shit about Maleficent. You can't make me give a shit about Maleficent. So I do want to see Aladdin. I haven't had the chance. Because that one I think will translate better to being live action. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. But on the whole, like I'm not like Dumbo, never watching it. There's just so many of them where it's like, it doesn't add anything new. First off, it doesn't add anything new to that property. Like you're not doing something different with it or particularly unique but also you're not adding anything new to film. Like you're not doing anything new or groundbreaking or interesting, you know? Like not every film has to do that. But I think if you're gonna make money on something twice, you should probably just, you know, vary it up a little bit. And from what I understand, like, Lion King just doesn't really do that.
Yeah, I just...
And there's literally no point of animating a realistic, because it's not live action, it's just a realistic version of the Lion King. There's just no point. It is already animated, and now you're just animating it to look real. It was fine. Leave it alone.
That's the one thing that sets me off is people who call this a live action film. It's like, no, it isn't. There are no human actors in this film whatsoever. It is still animated.
Voice actors, but nevertheless, and that's a thing. You know, voice acting is a legitimate thing. I'm not saying it's not legitimate,
but it's like there's no human characters. It's all CGI. It's all CGI animals. It's all CGI backgrounds. It's a CGI movie that makes it animated. It's not live action. And I want to clothesline anybody who calls The Lion King a live action film. I have had very passionate fights with my sister about this.
There's no other way to distinguish them other than to say one is live action or like old and new. That's the only other way you could say it.
You know, I could deal with old and new, but if we go by the logic that the new Lion King is live action, then by that logic, so was Dinosaur.
Ugh. Everybody's been saying live action in quotation marks. That's the way I've seen it. I haven't seen anybody who actually thinks it's live action. but it's just, there's some properties that you can just leave the fuck alone. And I've heard some people say that they're doing all these remakes to hold on to licenses. And I've heard other people say that that's not the case because, you know, like they have to like produce something every once in a while in order to not lose like the trademark or the copyright or whatever. And I've heard other people say that that's not really the case for this, you know, for these like Disney movies and stuff that, you know, the patents aren't ready to run out.
I mean, that argument makes sense for things like, say, Cinderella or Maleficent that are based on public domain properties. But, I mean, The Lion King, unless you want to get into the whole Simba versus Kimba argument, which is a discussion for an entirely separate table, you know, that was a wholly Disney-created product. There's no license to lose.
Well, you know, like, something might eventually go public domain. You know? Like, that's why they, like, years ago, they changed the, like, every time you go see a Disney movie, there's, like, Steamboat Willie driving it, and they, like, made a new Steamboat Willie animation so they could patent it so they could keep Steamboat Willie.
Yep.
So, like, that kind of thing. Like, they just gotta keep doing it to make sure they don't lose it. They don't fall into public domain. Yeah. I've heard that that's not actually true. That's not why they're doing it. And I would believe that it's not true and that they're just doing it to make money, to cash in.
Got to get those dollar bills.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not wholly against it. There are some franchises that I think lend themselves well to live action versions, you know, ones with mostly people in them, for example. And
give me a live action Three Caballeros or get the hell out of my sight.
I forgot what I was going to say. But it does, you know, there is the opportunity to bring, you know, this franchise to a new generation. But with the release the impending release of the Disney Plus or whatever they're calling their streaming service, the things that were previously unobtainable, like vaulted movies, are no longer going to be a thing. So to me, it's like, okay, we're not restricted, like, because we can't get the movie on DVD because it's in the vault. Everything's going to be at our fingertips now. So we don't really need to keep remaking a bunch of shit because we'll have the original thing right there.
So they're just double dipping, basically.
You know, I wonder. I really do wonder that. I wonder if they set out a plan for all these live action movies before their streaming service was finalized, or if they are really just like, no, give us all the money. Mm. It's probably just give us all the money. Let's be real.
So, all right, but that's all the Ask the Geek questions that we have for this week. Thank you, as always, for sending them in. As always, you can send them to us through the email at drgonzo@nerdofthethirdpower.com. We love getting your questions, love reading them on the air, so go ahead and get your questions in. You just might get yours read on the show. And now that we've had our visuals, let's get right down to the meat of the show, and that is Netflix's Stranger Things, a show that I have been wanting to talk about since season 2 came out. I was one of the latecomers to Stranger Things. I absolutely fell in love with the show once I finally got around to started watching it. And so season 3 came out a couple weeks ago. So we're going to go ahead and talk about our general, you know, kind of just our general thoughts on the show as a whole, and then break down season 3. So Kat, I think you were actually the first of us to actually discover Stranger Things. So let's start with you. What drew you to Stranger Things? What is it about Stranger Things that you enjoy so much?
Well, first off, I need to state, if I didn't already mention this in a prior episode, that the very first episode of Stranger Things that I ever watched was like a week or two after it launched on Netflix, like season 1 launched on Netflix, and everybody was saying it was really good, and I didn't know anything about it except that it was like really 80s themed, and I was really, really sick one day, and I was like holding up on the couch, and it was like, I was ready to go to bed, but I wasn't quite tired enough. And I'm like, let me put on this show that I actually have no interest in, really. And I'll just throw that on the TV and veg out for a little while. And then within 5 minutes, I'm like hyperventilating. I'm like, oh my God, this is so scary. Oh my God. Like, like I sat straight the fuck up at the first jump scare. I was like, why did I do this to myself?
So you were legit hallucinating.
It was pretty wild. It was a wild ride. Because I went in completely blind. I didn't know anything about it. So I didn't expect there to be like a monster right away. So that was fun. But I have been super hooked on it ever since. There's a lot of different things that make it so enjoyable. One, the nostalgia of everything being the 80s. Gonzo and I are 80s babies. So we were allowed to have nostalgia for the 80s, even though we were quite young during the 80s. So the nostalgia for quote unquote simpler times, but the running themes of Dungeons and Dragons in it is pretty entertaining. The clear homages to other science fiction elements, like there's, you know, homages to Close Encounters, Alien, like basically everything.
Yeah, basically like every other frame of the series is an homage to some 80s show or film, if you know what you're looking for.
Yeah, and it's all just so brilliantly executed. The fact that it's a really interesting show and there's kids in it, but it's not 100% solely focused on kids or adults, that it breaks the character screen time down pretty equally. You know, it's a very emotional series. Everything feels really raw in it. And the kids who are in it are just so talented. I mean, everybody's talented because Winona Ryder in there. It's a lot of really good stuff going on. And it's like a continual mystery, especially the first season of, you know, what's going to happen next. And it's really edge of your seat action. And that's why I love it.
Yeah, one of the two things that I love the most about Stranger Things is, one, like you mentioned, how it uses the 80s tropes, and it kind of, you know, there's so much of this focus now on subverting tropes and subverting expectations, whereas Stranger Things just kind of plays into the hilt and says, you know what, you know, these things don't need to be twisted around at every single turn. We can actually play these to the hilt and still make something good out of it. Like, you know, one of the standout ones is, you know, if you've seen a lot of 80s movies, particularly ones about kids, you know, there's always the bully character that, you know, torments the lead kids and winds up getting their payback in a spectacular and over the top fashion. And you know, you had those you've had one in some form or another in every season so far, but the ones in the first season are the ones that stand out the most to me, just because of what fucking little shits they are. I remember the scene at the cliffside where Eleven goes, you know, just goes ham on these bullies. And I remember it being, you know, I'm looking at this like, you know, I should be horrified by what I'm seeing these kids do to these younger kids, what these bullies do. But at the same time, I'm kind of laughing because, like, this is just so 80s. It's hysterical. The other thing that I really like, and I want to, this also goes back to your earlier part about how talented the child actors are, is one of the things that really has bothered me about modern media about kids or surrounding kids is there's this tendency to make the kids be almost like miniature adults.
Yes.
Like they know things that they really wouldn't at that age, or they have priorities that they wouldn't have at that age. But the kids in Stranger Things are just that. They're kids, you know, and they act and behave as kids would. And like the standout moment is, I believe it's in season one. It's when Dustin and Mike are talking in Mike's basement, and Mike and what's the black kid's name? I can't remember it off the top of my head. And Lucas. And Mike and Lucas have had a fight. They're not talking to each other. And Dustin's like, okay, you know, you know the rules. You drew first blood. You've got to shake his hand. And Mike's like, no, I'm not going to shake his hand. Dustin's like, no, you've got to shake his hand. This is the rule of law. Obey or be banished from the party. And like, that is just, you know, what group of friends didn't have those weird playground laws, you know, growing up, that nobody can remember who came up with those rules, but they were unspoken, they were clear, and they were ironclad, and everybody just obeyed them. And it's like, but it's like that kind of thing that, you know, solidifies these kids as kids. And I just absolutely love that. And you know, the cast is in general, you know, it is large in each season, but the show is so phenomenally paced that nobody's really stealing the spotlight. Everybody gets kind of an equal level of importance to the plot, except for maybe Max in season two. But I think her introduction to season two was to set her up for the arc in season three. So in hindsight, you know, that's a little less egregious than I initially thought it was. Excuse me. But yeah, just you know, there's, I don't know. You ever watch a film or a show that you can just tell as you watch it that the people who made it had a real passion for what they were doing? That's what I see in season three. I can't point to a single actor in this series and think, okay, I don't think he was having a good day this day. It's like, you know, it really feels like everybody's just having an absolute blast making the series, absolutely loving it, and it really shines through in the performances and the production.
You could tell the Duffer brothers are huge nerds. I love that you can tell that they're huge nerds.
indeed. I guess for those who haven't seen the show, before we start breaking down season three, we should probably give a quick recap of seasons one and two, and you know, what kind of stuff goes down in there. So Kat, why don't you go ahead and just give us a brief Cliff's Notes of the first two seasons.
Oh, brief shit, that's gonna be hard. Okay, so the basic premise of Stranger Things is that in the quaint town of Hawkins, Indiana, in 1985, there are a bunch of secret scientists who work for the government doing experiments, and they have a girl who is called Eleven, and she escapes. Woo! She escapes after she has kind of sort of accidentally, like, torn a hole into another plane of existence that's sort of like this eldritch monstrosity plane.
Think Silent Hill with a lot more dust.
Or if you're a D&Der, it's very like Abyssal. There's a lot of Call of Cthulhu shit going on. There's a group of four friends, Mike, Will, Lucas, and Dustin, who are kids, just four really good friends, and a couple of their older siblings and stuff. And Will goes missing one night, and he has been taken, they don't know it, but he has been taken by a monster from the other side of this gate, called a Demogorgon. And the first season is everybody, like the parents, the police, and the kids, all trying to figure out what happened to Will. So it's kind of like this really horror mystery of everybody's coming to realize what the viewer already knows is that there is monsters involved and they are terrifying, and that Eleven, this poor girl who has been basically raised in a laboratory who can barely speak, is their best chance of finding Will and stopping the Demogorgon. So a lot of stuff happens. And they defeat the Demogorgon, and then Eleven goes missing after defeating the Demogorgon. It's kind of presumed that she might have died. And then in season two, you find out that Eleven didn't die, and that the police chief, Jim Hopper, has actually been hiding her out in the woods and acting like her basically like a surrogate father to her and trying to teach her, but also keep her safe because there was this big cover-up and people died. And so, you know, he's afraid of her basically getting snatched up by the government again. And while all that's going on, we find out that Will, who had been taken to the other side of the gate, had been brought back. He was not quite normal. There was a lot of weird stuff going on with Will. And so most of the season is spent with Will being manipulated by a new monstrosity called the Mind Flayer. Which, for everybody who plays D&D, is nothing like an actual Mind Flayer, but it's really cool. So Will is being manipulated across the gate to... because this gate is still open. Like, it never got closed. The tear in between planes that L opened was never closed. So there's this creature called the Mind Flayer trying to get through, and because Will was a good vessel, he's manipulating Will into a series of events. And so a lot of season two is trying to get Will back on track, trying to keep him from helping the Mind Flayer to destroy the world, and everybody finding out that Eleven's still alive, and it introduces some new characters, and we find out that Hopper is working with certain sections of the government, and a lot of bad stuff happens. It is very brutal. Dustin gets a Demogorgon dog creature thing. It gets weird. But it ends with L closing the tear.
And then we also have to give brief mention to Sean Astin as Bob Newby, who is just the sweetest and most tries his absolute hardest to be a good stepdad, but dies horribly in I think the second to last episode.
Yeah, it did have Sean Astin playing Samwise Gamgee, basically. He was such a cinnamon roll.
But, you know, like the song says, the good die young.
Oh,
one of the things that that came about in season two was the introduction of a pair of characters to the cast, and that is Max and her older brother Billy. Who serves the role of the bully for season two, and Max is a new addition to the group of friends, bringing the total out to a total of six, and that's important because Billy actually winds up being really important to the plot of season three. So I guess now this is the part where we're going to start talking about season three and the plot therein. So. Season three kicks off. I want to say maybe like a year. I think it's the summer immediately following season two, or maybe a year or so afterwards. Life has pretty much gotten back to normal. Mike and Eleven are actually dating. If you know that's what you want to call sitting in the room at Hopper's house and furiously making out while Hopper tries desperately to keep the door open to watch them. Let's see. The gang, the rest of the friends have come back from their various summer vacations. Dustin has come back from a science camp with tales of a girlfriend in Canada that, you know, the stereotypical, you know, I've got a girlfriend that you're not going to meet story that we all had as children. And, you know, there's an overall theme of people growing up and how there's this fear that this gang of friends is going to wind up growing apart because poor Will, who's had the absolute shit beat out of him over the last two seasons, he just wants nothing more than just sit down and play a game of goddamn Dungeons and Dragons. But everything going on around him, he doesn't get his wish, and I felt bad for him. Will needs a break.
Yeah, poor Will.
Well, it turns out that there is actually, of all things, Russians, a group of Russians who have made a base underground in Hawkins, and because, you know, you just can't leave well enough alone, they're trying to reopen the tear into the Upside Down, as it's called. And the Mind Flayer gets its chance to basically go, okay, round two. So it winds up possessing Billy and uses him as this vessel to build this army. We later find out specifically to strike at Eleven because it has figured out that she was the one who closed the gate on it. And it has basically made it's basically become hellbent on killing her. Another plot thread that runs throughout this season is the, you know, this new mall that was built, the Starcourt Mall. And that storyline centers specifically on the ice cream shop Scoops Ahoy and its workers. Let me see here now. I got a cast list here. Let me pull it up here.
Robin.
Yeah. What was the dude's name though?
Steve.
With Robin, who's a new character this season, and Steve, who's been around since season one. And Steve, over the course of season two, he came to be real good friends with Dustin. So when Dustin comes back from science camp, he brings he's brought this radio tower that he's built, because that's just what you did in the 80s as a smart kid. You built your own ham radio. And he winds up intercepting a Russian transmission, which he takes to Steve and Robin at Scoops Ahoy. And that's what you do. And they wind up translating it and discovering this secret Russian base underneath the mall. Because if you're going to build a secret Russian base in the middle of the Cold War, what better place than underneath a mall? Because it just makes so much sense. And so they wind up discovering this underground base and infiltrating it with the help of Lucas's sister. So that's that plot thread. The other plot thread the third plot thread concerns Hopper and Joyce, who this is what I think is the weakest start as far as plot points go. Basically, Joyce is worried that her magnets don't work and thinks that there's something hinky going on. And poor Hopper, he's just like, look, you know, I just want to grab dinner and have a normal life, but this bullshit keeps happening. And they wind up stumbling across the Russian subplot and abducting a Russian scientist. They're chased by Mr. Not a Terminator throughout the whole series.
He's totally the Terminator.
Mr. Bargain Bin Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it all finally culminates. There's a fourth plot thread that's actually going through, and that involves Mike's. Is it Mike or is it Will's older brother? No, Will's older brother. God, so many characters. I can't keep track of them. John, Will's older brother John, and his friend, Jonathan Byers.
Oh, Jonathan. Yeah, they never call him John.
Okay, all right. Jonathan. That's what I'm talking about. Jonathan. Jonathan and Karen, who are working for a newspaper as interns, and they kind of stumble across stumble across the Mind Flayer's plot to possess people, And it all culminates in this huge throwdown fight at the mall against basically the Avatar of the Mind Flayer, who's been using these possessed people and actually reducing them to this goo that it's using to constitute its physical form within our reality. There's teenage drama, lots of angst, lots of shouting, lots of Russian conspiracy, Cold War era stuff, and it's just a good rollicking time all around. And there's also some really brilliant fucking jokes. At one point, Dustin sings the never-ending story, completely apropos of nothing, in the middle of what could possibly be the end of the world, and it somehow fucking works because this is the 80s, and we were just all on all the drugs back then. So let's just start breaking this down into its component parts. So, Kat, what did you think of the story and plotting of season 3?
Well, I rather enjoyed all of it, the story and everything. It seems apropos of the 80s and also relevant to modern times to have Russia be the bad guys. There's very little more 80s than a Cold War kind of vibe than having the Russians come and just fuck up what little peace you've managed to find. So I liked that they were able to keep the same, you know, they weren't looking around for a new monster, basically. They used season 2's monster. So there wasn't like an escalation issue, you know, or anything like that. We're not suddenly, this isn't Supernatural, you know, they're not like, okay, we did a monster and then we did a bigger monster and now we have to do the devil, you know, nothing like that. So they're staying with like the same theme and the same like brand of villains, basically. Very, very interesting how they can keep coming back to the same thing. The same, okay, here's a gate and now there's a monster. Like, they're doing the same thing, but keeping it fresh and fun.
Yeah. Because one of my worries going into this was like, okay, how are they going to justify opening the gate again? Because like at the end of season 2... I mean, the whole government the whole government lab had pretty much been pretty definitively shut down. So it's like, okay, how are they gonna go back to that?
And now an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow, that's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi. So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Yeah, and I like that they did go back to that rather than coming up with something new. They're keeping us in a familiar territory with something that's incredibly alien, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked how the Mind Flayer basically plotted out its plan. I really liked the fact that it wasn't, because the Demogorgon and the Demodogs in the first two seasons were very much, I mean, you know, yeah, they were monsters, but they were very bestial. Whereas the Mind Flayer, it's made very clear throughout the season that, yeah, it's an eldritch abomination, but it's a thinking one. It's one that has a plan, and it knows what it wants to do and how it's going to pull it off. And I also really liked that I really liked that it used Billy as its avatar, because I absolutely fucking hated his ass in season 2, and then yes. Season 3 rolls around and is like, oh good, I have an excuse to want to see him dead.
Yes, and then in true Stranger Things fashion, it just sort of is like, hey, remember how you hate this guy? Now you're gonna feel really sorry for him.
Yeah. And another thing that I really, one of the things I really enjoyed about the story, this the stories of the season, is how the one of the great things about the show is how all the different plots and character threads weave in and out of each other and build on each other. So one of the plot threads that is running through this season is, you know, Mike, of course, you know, like you said, Mike and Eleven have started dating, with air quotes. And when early in the season, Hopper has, you know, gotten kind of a little uncomfortable. He doesn't want his little girl, you know, growing up too fast. So he basically does the overprotective dad bit and scares Mike into kind of backing off. But of course, you know, because he's, you know, a preteen kid, you know, he doesn't really know how to articulate to Eleven that, you know, hey, your dad scares the hell out of me. And it winds up causing this sort of misunderstanding and they wind up breaking up. And, you know, it's, you know, again, it goes back to how, you know, these are kids that are actually kids and they act like kids. So, you know, there's this drama that, you know, Mike is kind of, you know, distraught over the fact that he's broken up with his first ever girlfriend. But at the same time, it's like, you know, later on, they're just kind of like, you know, they get back together, but it's not in an over the top, overly sentimental, you know, oh, you know, I love you forever and I meant to be together. It's just kind of like, you know, look, this is what happened and this is what I was trying to do and I'm sorry. Would you like an M&M? You know, the season three knows, the show as a whole, but season three especially, it knows when to be low key and it also knows when to be over the top. And I love that it kept a lot of the over the top stuff for, you know, the monsters and the Russians. And it let the kids still be kids. And I absolutely enjoyed that. If that makes any sense. I feel like I'm rambling a lot tonight.
Oh, no, it really did. And yes, we're both rambling. It's fine.
But like I said, and again, you know, everything felt like it had a purpose in this season. The one thing that I didn't like about this season had to deal with the relationship between Hopper and Joyce, and that's that, like, you know, throughout this whole season they just will not stop giving each other shit, and I'm just like, you know, when the journalist guy finally has his blow up at them in the car, he's like, oh god, just screw and get it over with. I was finally just like, yes, finally, just you do something, just like quit fucking screaming at each other throughout the whole thing. Because, like, you know, it was funny for the first few episodes, but and I thought that they were going to finally put it to bed on that scene in the mayor's house where Hopper's like, okay, I want you to forget about sales and come work for me at the police department. But then they just started up again. And I'm just like, oh god, I'm just so sick of seeing these two fight. Like, can we just like put our shit aside for 1 minute here, please?
I didn't mind that. The part that drove me nuts was Lucas's little. Erica,
yeah,
gets roped into going into the Russian base.
Mm-hmm.
She's the only one small enough who could fit in the air ducts. Because first off, they are shitty kids. Like, they are like willing to throw themselves in danger and endanger their friends. But like, I don't think realistically Robin would let Erica do this. Like, I just don't see that as being realistic. So, like, I just can't wrap my mind around why she was there. But she didn't really serve that much of a purpose. She was really obnoxious most of the time. Now, I did watch the whole thing twice because I watched it, like, I binged it, and then I rewatched it with my roommate. And I didn't mind Erica as much the second watch through. But, like, generally, I find her almost... It's just like nobody likes a sassy child who's their only thing is that they're sassy.
Yeah. Although like
she's sassy and arrogant and never learned, and that's a problem.
Yeah. Although it did lead to an epic verbal beatdown from Lucas about the fact that she's actually a nerd.
From Dustin.
Not Lucas. Yeah, Dustin. Yeah, but it's like, I'm not a nerd. No, here's why. And he uses mathematics and My Little Pony to prove his point. I absolutely love that.
That was pretty good.
So a character that I had a problem with was the abducted Russian scientist.
No, Alexei.
Yeah, Alexei. That was his name, or at least the name they gave him. Because I kind of felt like he was. I don't know. I feel like he didn't really add anything except he was just there to be a burden. So
he was there for you to fall in love with so that they could just kill him.
Yeah, well. So that was the one character that that I just really didn't jibe with was Alexei.
I loved Alexei.
Mm.
He was so funny. Because he's a little bit right and a little bit wrong. You know, but like genuinely, you're like, oh, this is somebody who humanizes the opposition. He's one of these scary Russian scientists. But is he, though? He just seems like a nice guy who wants to watch cartoons and not die.
Yeah. So, but I mean, there's so many different plot threads that run through this season, and it's hard to discuss all of them. But like I said, they all just come together so brilliantly. And I liked that we finally got to see, like I mentioned in season two when Max was introduced, she was just kind of there and didn't really serve a greater purpose. And I liked that we got to see her actually be a more active participant in the party's antics. And I absolutely loved the bit, the halfway point, where she basically plays the devil on 11 shoulders, like, okay, you know, look, Mike is fucking lying, you need to drop his ass and come shopping with me. You know, because it was great to see 11 get to be like an actual normal kid for once, and I absolutely love seeing that, and it warmed the cockles of my cold black diseased heart.
Yeah, because Max's role last season was to be the outsider. And this season, she's in on everything. Nobody has to hide anything from her. She's officially one of the party now. So she gets to actually, like, not be shit all over. Like, the first, like, second season was really rough for her because she's trying to make friends after coming from a really pretty abusive family, all things considered. And these guys are just treating her like trash. Really. And it's because they're kids and they don't really get it. And it's kind of, you know, it's realistic that they would be like, oh, we can't tell her anything. Ah, but we still want her to be our friend because she's kind of cool. And now that she's in on everything, Max can actually like come out and do stuff and be part of the conversation, you know? But she also represents, you know, she's in it, but she's less traumatized by it. I think it's not as defining for her because she has all of her family issues that are her primary trauma. So like poor Will just wants to play D&D because he spent two seasons like getting kidnapped by monsters and abused by monsters. And his friends have spent two seasons trying to help him. And she's like, yeah, but I've spent most of my life getting abused by this asshole.
Going on to Will, I did like that they actually did something with him this season, as opposed to just because, yeah, even though the poor boy just like he just wants to play some Dungeons and Dragons and just put all this shit behind him, like he actually gets to be useful and contribute because he basically serves as the radar for the Mind Flayer and its antics. He just goes like, hey, look, every time it's nearby, I get these goose pimples up my neck, and that's, you know, I'm the monster detector. And it's like, yay, I get to actually do stuff.
Yeah, it was nice for him not to be a damsel in distress, kind of, you know, a whatever in distress, a poor child in distress. Somebody who, you know, he doesn't need to be rescued this season. It's nice to see him get to be normal and not be kidnapped and traumatized. He's still traumatized, but now he's more proactive about his own fate.
Yeah.
And honestly, since he was the one going, hey, can we just play Dungeons and Dragons? He's honestly a relatable character for me because he doesn't give a shit about all of this romance and teen drama. He just wants to play Dungeons and Dragons. And I feel that.
But of course, you know, we can't discuss we can't discuss this season without discussing the monster design of the Mind Flayer. And can I say this thing was like fucking disgusting and terrifying, and I absolutely loved its design.
Yes. Again, nothing like an actual Mind Flayer, so it's just sort of, would you describe this as like a multi-legged, really long-legged creature with like tentacle face?
I would describe it as what you would get if a Tyrannosaurus and a T-Rex had a baby.
A Tyrannosaurus and a T-Rex.
Excuse me, a Tyrannosaurus and a tarantula.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be... It's really horrifying. I thought that the ick factor was a lot higher this season with the introduction of the Mind Flayer into the physical realm. Like, in the previous season, we got to kind of see it in its own plane of existence, and it was sort of, like, there, but it wasn't, like, hardened into reality, basically.
Yeah, it didn't have, like, a defined, like, it had a kind of escape, but it was a very kind of, you know, not really defined. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like it was out of focus. And you know, it had, like, these very, like, it was very soft, because most of the time that we saw it was, like, in a quick vision or one of Will's drawings or something like that. And so it just looked not quite real. And then when you put it into the real world, and again, like you said, it's made up of people. That's disgusting. It is really, really icky. There was, like, exploding rats everywhere congealing into this thing, exploding people everywhere congealing into this thing. It was a high gross factor this season. And that it made it a little bit harder for me to watch because I like the ick. But it made it that much more terrifying because we got to see it getting bigger and bigger until it's like climbing over the mall like a big fucking spider and chasing them down the road like a fucking Tyrannosaurus in Jurassic Park. I mean, and then like the ick factor continues with the fact that like it can, like, its tendril feet thing, tentacles, whatever, like it can pierce, it can impale. It's just, oh God, it was so icky. But unlike, like, say, season one, where we had the Demogorgon and that was the villain, the face of the Mind Flayer was Billy. So that, I think, presented really interesting things because this was the first time we got to hear the actual thoughts of one of the monsters. Because in the previous season, it was Will saying he doesn't like the cold or he doesn't like this, and interpreting the emotions of the Mind Flayer, whereas this is Billy basically as a mouthpiece. He's like the Metatron of monstrosity. So it's literally the Mind Flayer talking through this human vessel. And I think it's really interesting because it really shows the acting chops of the guy who plays Billy. And same thing with Will in season two. There was so much nuance and then into these wild extremes that both of these actors have had to play as they've been possessed by the Mind Flayer. But Billy really killed it this season because, like we said, he was a bully last season. He was like, wow, I really hate this guy. And they were really just setting him up for the third season to be the main villain. And he just really knocked it out of the park. He's so sleazy and, like, ugh, but good to look at, I guess. But then for him to be possessed by the Mind Flayer, you're like, wow, he's an asshole, but he doesn't deserve this. And then watching him, like, basically lead people to their deaths and then get away with it, you're like, oh, fuck you, Billy. And then you get that wonderful flashback that Eleven sees of him in his mind of when he was a kid with his mom. And you're like, oh, God damn, I actually feel bad for him. And they had set him up as, like, a tragic villain pretty early on because it's clear he doesn't want to be under the sway of the Mind Flayer, but he doesn't really have any say in it. It's beyond his power. Like, there's nobody except Eleven who can contend with the Mind Flayer. So, like, Billy was...
And even that's not an even fight.
I know! Like, the Mind Flayer is crazy powerful. Like, it took a village, basically, to stop it.
Yeah, and the only reason that they were even able to stop it was it wasn't because of what they were doing to the Avatar directly, which they had to close the gate and cut off the connection. So,
yeah.
And I again, this is it has to be said. One of the things that's made clear throughout this season is that this isn't just some mindless beast. This is a thinking creature, and it makes it pretty clear it's after 11. It knows that she's been the thing standing in its way, and it wants her dead. So, and that just ramps up the horror because it's like, okay, you know, yeah, the Demogorgon and the Demodogs, yeah, they're monsters and they kill people, but I mean, they're kind of just doing what they do, you know, monster's gonna monster. This is a thing that specifically wants you dead, and that's what makes it even more pants shittingly terrifying.
Yeah, the previous two seasons were like, these are monsters. This season, it was like, they literally came out and said, hey, it's personal this time. This is all for you, Eleven. Like, oh no, because if and when they do the next season, like, imagine how much worse that's going to be. Oh my God, I'm scared just thinking about it.
So, what were some standout moments for you this season? What were some moments that you really enjoyed?
Gosh, there were so many, because for any complaints that we have about characters we didn't care for or plot lines we didn't care for, doesn't matter, we're still so good. Like, even the characters I like the least still had great moments. I'd say some of my favorite moments were with Steve and Robin, when they get drugged up by the Russians and they're just like laughing over their impending death. And and then later when they're coming off of the high and he's basically later confessing that he's in love with her, and she has to come to terms with, okay, he's in love with me, but I'm definitely a lesbian. And like that coming out story, like both of them being so brave, really, they're being emotionally brave with one another, I thought was really, really well done. Gosh, we have to talk about the final episode where we finally get to meet Susie. And Susie is Dustin's
girlfriend in Canada.
Girlfriend in Canada. She's his camp girlfriend that who lives in Utah, and they're supposed to talk, and they've tried to get her to come on the radio, and everybody says Susie's fake. And everybody doubts him so much that you're watching it going, Susie is definitely real. And so at the last minute, they need some help. And Dustin's like, I know, we'll talk to Susie. And Susie turns out to absolutely be real, but she won't tell Dustin the information that she needs until he sings the theme song
to the never-ending story.
And they have this beautiful duet in the middle of the climax of the show.
For context, as this is going on, you have Hopper and Joyce sneaking into the Russian base with soldiers chasing after them. You have the Mind Flayer's avatar chasing after the 11 and the rest of the gang in a car, and all this crazy shit going down, and they're on this radio that they've been talking to each other through walkie-talkies, and everyone is listening to this conversation between Dustin and his girlfriend and hearing this song, and everyone just gets this look on their face like, oh my God, this is really happening. I'm going to die. The last thing I'm going to hear is fucking Lamal.
And the best part about it is that both of the actors, Dustin's and Susie actors, can sing so well. Like, they've both performed on Broadway in singing roles. Like, they're both so good. So it just kind of comes out of nowhere. Like, is this really happening? No, why are they so good? This is ridiculous. And I don't know a single person who watched Stranger Things third season without having that fucking song stuck in their head for like at least 8 days. It's so crazy. I mean, like, I've seen some pretty wild, like, hey, this is the season finale, and then that happens. You have shattered my expectations for all other season finales, because they didn't just like take the train off the tracks, they like stopped a car full on treads of tracks and the dirt, and you're just like, what the fuck is happening? It was such a crazy derailment, and it just fit the series so well. Oh gosh. That was, like, hands down, everybody that I says that was one of the best moments of the show.
Let's see. One of my favorite moments came from Lucas. And it's when they're in the convenience store and they're trying to, you know, get stuff together to, you know, to fight back. And he sees this fireworks stand. And, you know, Lucas never really got to show, you know, how smart he was in the first couple seasons. He was just kind of... kind of more the scrappy fighter, but he figures out that, like, you know, okay, look, if we take enough of these fireworks and we mix these together, we can get, like, you know, basically sticks of dynamite here. And it actually pays off because they actually managed to use it to actually hurt the Mind Flayer's avatar in the last battle. They don't manage to kill it, but they managed to, you know, at least make it think twice about what it's doing here, getting its shit kicked in by a bunch of kids. And then in the middle of that, they have a debate over old Coke versus new Coke, which I thought was, like, you know, you have to address that. You can't set your show in the 80s and not address new Coke.
Oh, man. So, I liked the shopping montage with Eleven, and it was just nice to see them being kids and being girls and going out and doing the thing you would have done in the 80s, going to the mall, trying on ridiculous looking clothes, getting your picture taken. Like, it just, it and it was like the first or second episode or something, maybe the second episode, but it really was just like, ah, normality, 80s normality, but nevertheless normality.
Yeah. So, but of course, you know,
good things. It was a lot of good moments, guys.
Yeah. But of course, you know, elephant in the room, you know, just as we had Bob Newby bite it in season two, you know, we have to have our tragic death this season. And, Hopper's the one who drew the short straw this time around. And man, like, the thing is, like, his death itself didn't really get to me, but man, when they read his letter
at
the end of the episode, I was just, oh God, I got broken in half.
Yeah. That was really, really tough. Because Hopper's thing happened so fast. He didn't get, like, a dramatic on-screen death like Bob did. It was just, he was there, and then he was gone. And you piece together, this is what they knew would happen if he stood there. He was going to get lasered. And then he was gone. And you're like, did they just fucking kill Hopper? And they kept the camera there a couple of times for a little bit long because they were psyching us out into thinking that he was going to have a dramatic last minute pop-up. Like he was going to, you know, climb, pull himself up over the edge or something and he would have been fine, but they tricked us and it didn't happen. And so you're like, oh fuck, this is happening. Hop's gone. But what got to me before the letter was when everybody's reunited, and Joyce is hugging Will, and she looks over, and Eleven is searching for Hopper. She needs to go hug her dad because nobody else is hugging, and he's not there. And they make that eye contact. And Joyce says it with her eye contact, and Eleven breaks down. And that's when I started crying, and then I didn't stop. Oh my gosh, because definitely in the reading of the letter, really, really, really emotional. Because he's, you know, it's Hop's letter for, like, hey, could you please, like, you're growing up too fast, give me this time, but, you know, make mistakes and we're gonna fight, it's gonna be like this, but, you know, this is all part of growing up and blah blah blah. And it was so emotional and so beautiful, and I don't know anybody who stayed dry-eyed through that. It was really, really sad.
And it's read throughout this montage of the Byerses basically packing up and getting ready to leave Hawkins. So it, in a way, it's kind of, you know, Will kind of casting dark prophecy. He's afraid of the group splitting up, and that's pretty much what happens at the end of this season.
Yeah. So. And I can't blame Joyce for wanting to move, because, you know, three traumas is plenty.
Yeah.
Just get out of Hawkins. Let everything else be someone else's problem. The next time Hawkins gets haunted by monsters from another plane.
Yeah.
Let that be someone else's problem. But yeah, it really felt like the end of an era. Even though we know there's going to be another season and that they all have to get the band back together, it really felt like a really rounded whole, like a whole ending. And then they got us a stinger. And I don't know, some people missed the stinger because it was just far enough in the credits that they had already turned it off. Did you catch the stinger?
I didn't see it, but I did read about it, so I know what happens.
Okay, so the stinger, after everything, is, you know, they go over to, they're panning over to Russia, basically, and it's two, like, Russian military-looking guys. I guess they're military-looking guys? I don't think they were scientists, but anyway, two Russian dudes, they're walking along, and they come to, like, a locked door, and one of them says to the other, no, not the American, and they go to another door. And pull some Russian dude out and basically throw him into a cage, and then out comes a Demogorgon. And this raises so many questions. But the most important question is, who those fucking American? Who's the American? Is it Hopper? Is it Hopper? It fucking better be Hopper.
Who knows? It could be Bob Newby.
Oh my god. Well, we saw him die on screen, but... You know, there's always that, like, are we being tricked and given hope that is not there?
Well, I mean, you know, it would make sense because consider just how 80s this movie is. Now go back and think to 80s slasher films. How many times have we seen Michael Myers just eat it? How many times did they kill Jason Voorhees and they always came back for the next one? So...
Yeah, but you know
that would be an 80s thing for them to do, is for them to bring back Bob or Hopper.
Yeah, so my thing is like, there's a lot of theory on how Hopper would have survived basically by going to the gate and coming out the other side where somewhere like where the Russians have been trying to open the gate. And maybe that's how they got a Demogorgon. Unless they somehow like found a living demo dog or something. But that's like one of the prevailing theories. But what's interesting, while I do believe Stranger Things would troll us, and that's not Hopper, somebody asked actor David Harbour in an interview, so what's the future of Hopper in Stranger Things? And he said, well, did you see the credits? And I'm like, oh. So I'm allowing myself some hope that somehow, some way, that's Hopper and that he's alive. And that we'll have him back next season.
Okay. So we're kind of running short on time here. So let's kind of start, let the wild and base speculations commence. What are some things you'd like to see in season 4 of Stranger Things?
Well, Hopper, for one. I'd like to see... So first off, whatever happens, it's probably going to be during the day, because the kids at the end were talking about getting back together Thanksgiving and then maybe Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So they did Christmas one season, and this one was 4th of July, so maybe Thanksgiving will be the next one. But I think it sounded like maybe everybody was going to get back in Hawkins at Christmas. Maybe. We'll see. So I'm hoping it's another holiday. Yeah, it's been a different holiday every season. The second season was Halloween.
Yeah.
So it's got to be during another holiday, first off. So maybe Thanksgiving, that'd be kind of cool. I don't know why, but just to keep the theme. I need a Hopper to come back. Maybe like midway through the series so that we start to forget our hope and then boom, he comes in. That would be good. I'd like to see a new monster besides the Mind Flayer. I don't necessarily need escalation. I don't need a scarier, or I don't need a bigger monster than the Mind Flayer, but something new, like maybe the Mind Flayer is tired of trying himself, so he's going to send some really terrifying minions that we haven't seen before to try and take out Eleven and the gang. I'd like to see the fallout with Max's family, with Billy being gone. I feel like that's going to have a big impact. Because Max's story in this season was particularly good, because she hates Billy because he's an a-hole who treats her like shit, but it's also like she does genuinely care and doesn't want anything bad to happen to him, so she was very distraught. with his final outcome. So I think it would have really interesting, if not just plain old horrible repercussions on her family, with her stepdad being the primary abuser and everything. I'd like to see the next group. I'd like to see like Erica with a nerd group doing Dungeons and Dragons, because that torch was passed on to her. So maybe like not the next generation, but you know, like maybe a new group of her friends who are all playing D&D now. That would be kind of nice. I definitely need more Robin. Whatever the hell Robin is doing with life, I'm 100% more. And more with Steve. Like, just whatever Steve is doing, I'm interested. I also care about Nancy and Jonathan, but less than Steve Harrington, because Steve is just the best. I'd like Nancy to get the fuck out of that town, I tell you what. Like, I'd like her to go become an ace reporter at some real paper in some real town. I'd feel bad if Nancy were continually trapped in this shitty town that she clearly doesn't want to be in anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to see Lucas kind of get a little bit more time in the spotlight. He had some moments to shine in the season, but like I said, for the first couple seasons, he was just kind of the other friend. And you know, he's had the least moments to really shine in this series. And I'd really like to see him take a little bit more time in the spotlight, and maybe kind of see more of him and Max together, because it's kind of just assumed that, you know, the two of them are actually spending time together. We don't get to actually see them. One of the things that I really kind of noticed over the season was, for all the talk about that about you know, Lucas and Max being together and dating, we never actually got to see them interact all that much this season. And
yeah, Lucas was kind of like the wise sage who already knew anything about dating, despite the fact he'd only been doing it for like half a year.
Yeah. So I'd kind of like to see more of Lucas and Max, and you know, see them take a little bit more in the stage. This is probably just wishful thinking on my part, but I would love to just see one moment where Will just like goes fucking ham on a monster. Just like where he's just like, you know what? I have had this to deal with this shit for 3 years. I'm just going to go nuts and just kick the shit out of something, some eldritch abomination. I would just love to see that.
You know,
like he just beats a Demogorgon to death with a pipe.
Yeah. Like what if he like started like learning martial arts or like goes to like firing ranges or just something for self preservation in future seasons and nobody knows about it. So like, just all of a sudden, he's just like, gets a gun, blam, 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 and just shoots the next monstrosity that comes up to him, and they're like, what the fuck?
Alright, but that is all the time that we have for Power this week, so I think it's safe to say that we really enjoyed Stranger Things Season 3, it's definitely worth checking out. I think we're both in agreement on that.
Oh yeah, so good.
Yes. So, Stranger Things, all 3 seasons, currently available on Netflix. Pretty short series, all told. You could probably power through all seasons in a day if you really work at it. A weekend if you go at a more leisurely pace. But definitely worth checking out. And so with that, that is all the time that we have for Nerd of the Third Power this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. We will see you guys in 2 weeks. As always, I'm Dr. Gonzo.
I'm the cat.
We'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Taka, play us out.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
You shouldn't go to Barnes & Noble and buy 10,000 books just so you can build a book fortress and yell out, "I am your book leader." You shouldn't buy 147 copies of War and Peace, stuff them inside turkeys, and serve them at Thanksgiving as turbookins. And you definitely shouldn't buy up all the copies of Dork Diaries, causing the neighborhood kids to stage a protest in your front yard. But you could, because at the Barnes & Noble Book Haul, you can get over 1,000 titles for 50% off. Stock up at your local Barnes & Noble. Turbookins are fictitious and should not be cooked at home.